Today's special guest has worked with several space agencies. He's also written several books, including the number one New York Times bestseller, Rocket Boys, and he just released his latest book called Don't Blow Yourself Up. Join us today as we interview Homer Hickam, coming up next.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Your Space Journey, where we venture into the future of space exploration. Your journey begins now.
Hello, thanks so much for joining me today. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce my special guest, Homer Hickam. Homer is the best-selling and award-winning author of many books, including the number one New York Times bestseller, Rocket Boys, which was adapted into the popular film and one of my favorite movies, October Sky. But Homer is much more than a rocket boy. He's been a writer since grade school, a Vietnam veteran, a former coal miner, a scuba instructor, an avid amateur paleontologist, and a retired engineer. Homer joins me today to discuss his latest book, Don't Blow Yourself Up, The Further True Adventures of the Amazing Rocket Boy.
Your Space Journey.
Hello, Homer.
Hey, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I think I'm doing okay, all things considered.
I actually want to share something with you.
Okay.
That I really got a kick out of. This actually... See if I can remember which screen this is. This blew me away. We actually spoke, oh my gosh, like 3.5 years ago. And you wrote me just this wonderful thing on Twitter after our interview. And I just wanted to thank you face to face or face to Zoom, because I cannot tell you how much that meant to me. I'm not showing it to you to brag on at all, because honestly, it makes me nervous because I have a lot to live up to after that first interview.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great interview. What? Yeah, I remember that.
Do you really?
Online coffee break. Yeah, absolutely. That was good.
It was so much fun, and I've always been a huge fan, and I always love your books. And just for those of our audience out there, way back then, that was, oh my gosh, like 2018, and it was even after that, but you wrote this wonderful book, Carrying Albert Home. For those of you who don't know about it, it's a great tale of a young couple and their special pet on a crazy 1,000-mile journey, which I still to this day laughed out loud as I was reading this. My wife said, shut up. I was like, this is so hilarious. So I love that book.
Oh, thank you. I love writing that book. That was a book that was a lot of fun. The young couple happened to be my parents long before I was born, and going down to Key West. And right after that book came out, I guess if that interview was in 2018, so that was very close to when our house got destroyed.
Yeah.
Down in St. John, the Virgin Islands, absolutely devastated by Hurricane Irma, which there's the 1935 hurricane and Carrying Albert Home. So I guess, absolutely. I enjoyed that interview. So I didn't have to think about rebuilding my house, because we were right in the middle of that at the time.
Yeah, I remember you did mention that in the interview, and I'm so sorry you went through that, but I trust everything's okay now.
We built it back. It's all good. It's all good.
Well, good. Well, why don't we have you on today? It's to talk about this awesome new book, Don't Blow Yourself Up, which I'm happy to say I'm not too far into. I'm on part two now. So I'm really, really enjoying it. I do want to wait before we talk about that, because I'll give you plenty of time. Sure. But I do want to kind of step back in time to say October 1957.
Oh, wonder why.
Wonder why.
You're Something happened.
The sky, you saw this little artificial satellite, Sputnik, going across. Can you describe that moment and kind of how it influenced you?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Russians launched Sputnik. I like to say the Russians launched Sputnik in 1957. And right after that, the United States launched us, that is the students of the country, because of that that Sputnik moment. But I was kind of a lackadaisical student. I was 14 years old. I was in the 10th grade. And didn't really know what I was going to do with my life. And then this Sputnik thing happened, and I'd read a lot of science fiction growing up. And it was like, I never expected anything like that to happen during my lifetime. Well, maybe we might get something into space, but certainly nothing like into orbit and scaring everybody like Sputnik did. And so all of a sudden, I just got fixated on the idea that I wanted to see this thing that everybody was talking about. We were living in this little Colwood, West Virginia, little coal town. So I told my mom that I was going to go watch. I read in the paper that Sputnik was going to fly over Colwood. This was the thing that everybody in the whole world was talking about, right? Yeah. But and nothing ever happened in our town that anybody would want to talk about. But Sputnik was coming to Colwood, so I told my mom I was going to go out in the backyard and watch Sputnik fly over that night. And she told the neighbor lady who told the neighbor lady, and somewhere along the line, down the fence line there, I think the message got muddled, and the message was that you could only see Sputnik from our backyard. So so my poor dad came out in the backyard, and there was all these people there, and he goes, Elsie, why are these people in our backyard? And they said, well, they're here to watch Sonny, as I was called back then, or help Sonny watch Sputnik fly over. And Dad said, it won't happen. President Eisenhower would never allow that to happen. But it did. Ike was not in charge of physics. And so sure enough, Sputnik showed up. And I'd never seen anything like it before. It was just so bright, and it was moving so steadily. You know, it was just unlike anything that I'd ever seen in the sky. And like this star. And I was so impressed by that at that moment, I decided that I was going to figure out how to get in the space business. So that's the reason I started building rockets. And that's why my mom told me, don't blow yourself up, which.
I love that. And there might be a few of our audience that actually maybe hadn't read the book Rocket Boys or seen the movie October Sky, a great movie on that. Just the top level view of it. Can you give a 30 second, 45 second, what is Rocket Boys October Sky before we go into your new book?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm always astonished when somebody is not familiar with the story or has seen the movie, because I think every substitute teacher in the world shows October Sky. they wheel that, you know, the little TV in, and there it is, because it'll fill up an hour and a half or so. The story is that that this boy that I was, 14-year-old little Sonny Hickam, living in Colwood, West Virginia, got it in his head that he wanted to join, be part of the space business. So the only way he could figure out how to do that was to build rockets. And his dad was the superintendent of the coal mine, and that kind of made the mayor of the town. And the idea of some boys building rockets in his town was nothing that he wanted to happen. But I gathered in five other boys. There were six of us, actually, including the prototypical nerd of all time, Quentin Wilson, who was so full of brains. He said that he couldn't do physical education, because his brains were too heavy, and you know, he was something else. So anyway, I gathered these boys in. We called ourselves the Big Creek Missile Agency, and we started trying to figure out how to build and launch rockets. And that was before you could order an Estes kit, you know. So we ultimately became quite sophisticated in our building, and we had a lot of help from our science teacher, Miss Riley, who got us a book called Principles of Guided Missile Design. I later saw that same book in a PhD program for rocket scientists. It required a working knowledge of calculus and differential equations, and I was having trouble with algebra at the time, but I learned that I could learn if I really, really wanted to. And ultimately, we carried our designs off to the National Science Fair and won the gold medal there in 1960. So, and my dad finally came around.
And Homer, yeah. I hate to interrupt you, but I have to say this, because every time you say the National Science Fair in 1960, I have to point out I am recording this from Indianapolis, and that's where it took place. And I have to admit, I actually get upset when I hear that the story of the rocket nozzle getting stolen. Because I'm like, I know that happens everywhere, unfortunately, where you have misfortune incidents. But what I love, again, is the story of how your town came together and saved the bell, so to speak.
Yeah, well, Chuck, I think I can let Indianapolis off the hook a little bit, because there were people there from everywhere, all over the country.
Exactly.
And also, I was just really dumb, because I grew up in this town where there weren't, you know, you never locked the front door or anything like that. We didn't even have locks on our lockers in high school.
Yeah.
So well, I noticed that everybody else was at night would put their stuff up. And I thought that was kind of silly because then you had to put it right back up again. And so I left my stuff out sitting there. And I always expected that eventually somebody would own up to taking those, the nozzles. They took the rocket nozzles, but they never did. And but yeah, you're right. The town, they were having a strike in the coal mine at that time. And my poor dad, the superintendent, was trying to manage all that. And my mom comes to him and says, "You got to help Sonny. He's, you know, you got to open up the machine shop." And that meant he had to work with the union. And so he did. And God bless him, and got those got new rocket nozzles up to me in time to get judged. So that it's a story. It's actually a true one. So
that's what makes it even more amazing. Yeah. And the thing I love too is, you know, the wonderful ending, you know, of Rocket Boys, October Sky is, you know, you all got together, you launched the rocket for the last time. And what I love about your book, Don't Blow Yourself Up, is it literally starts right where Sky, Rocket Boys ends. And it's kind of, I don't want to give, you know, too much away because I want people to read the book. It's a great book, but it's not what you expect, you know, as far as what happens afterwards.
No, I mean, in the movie, I do have a little postscript in the book that tells a little bit about what actually happened to the boy, but it's real quick. And it mostly focuses on working for NASA. And that's all the movie says is that, Homer Hickam went off to work for NASA and trained astronauts and everything's wonderful and great. And here's the shuttle flying and yay, boom, you know, but in fact, I didn't start working for NASA until I was 38 years old. So yeah, the book starts that very afternoon after all the big excitement and the boy and his dad have had a moment, you know, with the arms around each other, and it was all great. And then the boy comes back to his room and the other boys go somewhere else, and he's sitting there and realizes he has no clue what he's going to do with the rest of his life. He's not even applied for college, which was the whole idea of building these things in the first place. So it starts right there. And it tells how actually my mom sent me off to Virginia Tech, which was a great engineering school, but also a military college. And I ended up building this giant cannon down there called
Skipper. Tell us about Skipper.
Yeah, Skipper. You know, one of the reasons I haven't told Skipper stories, it's a lot like Rocket Boys in a way. So we had Virginia Tech was a pure military college when I went there. It was called VPI. Yeah. And our big rivals was VMI. And we used to play them every Thanksgiving in football, and they would march in their cadet corps and we'd march in theirs, and they had this little cannon called Little John, and they'd fire it and make a big deal, and they'd start chanting, "Where's your cannon? Where's your cannon?" Which really irritated some of us over in the cadet corps. So actually three cadets got together and we decided we were going to build this big cannon, but the administration was against it. Everybody was against it. They told us, "No, you can't do that. You know, blow yourself up. You don't know what you're doing." We did it anyway. We built this giant brass cannon. And in 1963, we called it the Skipper after JFK, who President Kennedy, because he was skipper of the PT-109 during World War II, and he had recently been assassinated. But we had the big game against VMI. They dragged out their little cannon, Little John. They fired it, and they went, "Where's your cannon? Where's your cannon?" And we dragged this great big thing out, and I put in the biggest charge it ever had in it. And let it go. And this thing weighs about 700 pounds. It lifted it right off the ground about an inch. Shockwave flew across the field, hit the VMI cadet corps, knocked their hats off, cracked the glass in the press box in the other side. And there was a stunned silence for a little while. And then came our cadet corps saying, "Here's our cannon.
Here's our cannon."
Here's our cannon. And that, to our delight and surprise, I must say, the Skipper cannon became an icon at Virginia Tech. They're on their third one now, but the original one, the brass one, is in the Virginia Tech Corps of Cadets Museum. Oh, yeah. And there is a company of cadets that is required to keep it all polished up, and they have a light on it. So it really is kind of like an icon. You go in there and you feel like that you're in some kind of church, you know?
Oh my gosh.
that was a fun thing to do.
And it's incredible. And again, you know, I guess that's a detrimental thing about podcasts is we took what was a great story. And I think there's three chapters that I was reading about the buildup of Skipper and everything that goes into it. And we've condensed it down. So I really, again, can't stress enough just how good of a writer you are, and people, you got to get out there and read this book. It's excellent. And then after that, just to kind of make it brief, it talks about college, but talks about how you got into the Army. Then it goes on to, I haven't gotten to this part yet, but how you served in Vietnam, became a scuba diver instructor, and so much more.
You, of course, when my mom heard I was building that cannon at Virginia Tech, I got the don't blow yourself up thing. Yep. And actually in Vietnam, I was blown up. And so I got the didn't I tell you not to blow yourself up thing from my mom. So, yeah, I mean, that's been kind of a quote from that originally came out of Rocket Boys that everybody kind of and logically and rightfully so identifies with me now. So
I think it's awesome. Now, obviously we love space here. So I do want to talk a little bit about, tell us what you did with NASA. I know that didn't happen until you're 38, but I'd love to hear about, and our audience would, what did you do for NASA?
Well, I was all prepared. I mean, really, when I came back from Vietnam and got out of the Army, ultimately that was in the late 1960s. And, that's when the Apollo program was winding down. So they were, NASA was laying engineers off. A lot of people don't remember that or realize that, but here in Huntsville, Alabama, where I live, it was almost turning into a ghost town because the Saturn was canceled, Apollo was canceled, and didn't know if the shuttle was going to be approved and all that. So I ended up going to work for the Army Missile Command, and which is right here in Huntsville. And I had a really good career with them, still working with rockets a little bit, and ended up over in Germany. Where NASA ended up hiring me, brought me back from Germany, and that was in 1981. And I came back and started working in the Space Lab program office. And Space Lab is kind of an unsung hero of the space business. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but a lot of people think it's Skylab. Skylab was our first space station, but Space Lab was a really, really cool a module that fit in the back of the space shuttle. And it was built by the European Space Agency, but it was designed by us at NASA. And I was in that program office where it got designed. And so it flew for a week or two, however long the shuttle was up there, and you brought back all your experiments and you were able to swap them out. They hadn't worked. You could tweak them a little bit and send them back up. You can't do that on the space station. Not very well. Anyway, so... So it was a series of wonderful flights. But when we started launching it, we realized, well, we got to train the crews, for Space Lab. And I was a scuba instructor and I was working in a neutral buoyancy simulator. And I knew a lot of the astronauts already. So I raised my hand and said, I'd love to do that. So most of my career, I ended up training astronauts to either work on Space Lab or go up and work on a space telescope. And so the wonderful part of that was I got to go spend a couple of years over in Japan training the first Japanese astronauts, which was, that was incredible. It was an incredible experience, which you'll get to read about. And then right after that, the Hubble went up and it turned out to be a little bit nearsighted. So I came back, and just as I came back, then I got assigned to the Hubble Space Telescope repair mission. And that meant I got to wear the space suit, the EMU suit, and go underwater and go through all the procedures on a one-to-one mock-up of the Hubble. And, along with other engineers, and try to figure out how we were going to repair it. And then the astronauts came up, Story Musgrave and Kathy Thornton, came up, changed everything. Of course, that's what they do, but that's all right. We got them started. And then I ended up, after that, got assigned to this new International Space Station. And that meant I got to go over to Russia and start negotiating with the Russians. So I spent a lot of time over in Russia negotiating with them how we were going to train their cosmonauts, how they were going to train our astronauts, and drank a lot of vodka. And
is that when you got to kind of meet the twin of Sputnik? Is that what?
Yes.
What was that like?
Cool. Well, it was pretty amazing. So I'm there in Russia, and you know, we've already talked about little Sonny Hickam, 14-year-old, being just like amazed by seeing Sputnik fly over. It changed his life, right? Changed the whole trajectory of his life. So there I was in Moscow, sitting across from the table from the same guys who had launched Sputnik. They were still there. Wow. our engineers and scientists from Apollo and all that era were long gone, long retired, moved on, whatever. And there they sat, these old gentlemen, kind of dour, kind of unhappy. Wow. The Soviet Union had fallen. They didn't have any money. They were having to take our money. And, you know, and so they wouldn't agree to anything. They were just so grouchy about the whole thing. But then and you have to, when you negotiate with the Russians, you have to never expect them to agree to anything during a meeting. They just don't do that. I learned different negotiating techniques with the Japanese, a totally different philosophy there. Wow, they know you're jet lagged, so they try to get you on the second day, you know. But anyway, the Russians, it's like they're only going to agree if they make a personal connection with you. And that can only be at the party after. And there's a party after every meeting. Doesn't matter. Vodka comes out. And so I was totally impressed by them. And because these were the guys that launched Sputnik. And I started telling them about growing up in Colwood and seeing Sputnik fly over, and that how it had changed my life and had changed so many other young lives in the United States. We'd actually become part of the space business because of what they had done. And they apparently had never heard that. They were just amazed that had happened. And I went, yeah, it did. And so we got to be buddies, you know, and they said, would you like to see Sputnik? And I went, yeah, but I know it burned up about 3 months after it was launched. They said, no, we built two.
Awesome.
So they took me to a location. It was kind of Indiana Jones thing. And they opened up a crate and there sat, without the antenna or anything, but there sat Sputnik. And it was just like the most amazing thing. And I said, can I touch it? You know, and they allowed me to touch it. And it was, that's now in a museum somewhere. But that to me was amazing. And I made this kind of human connection with them right at that moment. And I thought it kind of put a bookend on my life in a way. So fortunately, the good Lord has allowed me to go on anyway. So,
I think it's incredible. And again, I did skip ahead to read a little bit of that.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I've got to read this story. So that was neat. Now I know I appreciate you going over time a little bit for me. I want to kind of,
absolutely. I'm happy to stay.
Oh, good. I want to ask you this. You know, there's lots of momentum going on right now in the space industry.
It's momentum. The golden age, really, of human spaceflight.
It really is. I just want to ask you, if you were given the chance, would you go up?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to be just as pleasant as I can be anytime I'm talking about Elon or Mr. Bezos or Richard Branson. I've known Elon for a long, long time. Actually met him after he sold PayPal. He came to Adult Space Camp. And I was over there, and that was after Rocket Boys and October Sky. And so I hung out with Elon for a whole day because I'm on the board over there. Yeah. And I never expected him to do what he did. But I'm really, really proud and amazed at what he's done, bringing boosters back and using them over and over again. NASA would have never done that. We wouldn't have dared try because we would end up just blowing things up a lot. And that, you know, the federal government, the public that pays the taxes says, don't blow yourself up. So we try not to blow ourselves up, but Elon just went ahead. I loved it. He had kind of a Rocket Boys approach to everything, you know, Skunk Works. You go ahead and you try things and it blows up. So you tweak it and you keep moving. And so he's done wonderful. And then Jeff Bezos said that October Sky, he saw the movie October Sky, and that inspired him to start his company. And if there's any room on that new Shepherd, I'd be happy to fill a seat. You know, if they need a little ballast, I'm right there for Mr. Bezos. And Richard Branson's kind of a neighbor. We have a home in, like we were talking about, down in Virgin Islands. And I can't quite see it, although I try with my binoculars when it's really clear to see his island, because I know interesting things are happening over there. Yes. But so we're kind of neighbors. So he should want to fly me. So absolutely, I would go in a heartbeat.
Oh, I can see the hashtag now. Hashtag send Homer to space.
Well, really? I mean, come on. I mean, isn't it obvious?
I mean, would love to see that. Of course.
Jake Gyllenhaal says right there in the movie, "I want to go into space." He says it, and he ends up training the astronauts, but he doesn't get to go. Now I have to be careful with that because I'm afraid that Mr. Bezos will hear it and he'll decide to send Jake Gyllenhaal into space and not me. But
you wrote the story. It was your story, though.
That's right. Thank you, Chuck. You're right.
You got my vote, Homer, for sure. Right.
Counts a lot. That counts a whole lot right there.
I hope so. But I would totally watch that. I think that's great. And Homer, I just want to thank you again for writing these awesome books. I mean, there's a whole bunch of series of books that are all available. Let's say on your website, homerhickam.com. I encourage your audience to go check it out. And Homer, it's been a pleasure seeing you face to face finally. And after, you know, 3.5 years, always great talking to you. I just want to thank you so much for joining me.
Well, same here, Chuck. And I'm happy to come on anytime. So
I'm going to take you up on that. Hopefully the next time we talk, it'll be after your trip back from space.
Hey, there you go. Now you're talking.
There we go. Okay. Homer, you have an awesome day. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chuck.
Your space journey.
Well, I really enjoyed my conversation with Homer. It was so good to reconnect with him after 3.5 years. I especially enjoyed talking to him about his new book, Don't Blow Yourself Up. I highly encourage you to check that out. It is a fantastic read. It's available wherever you get your books. Also, if you want to learn more, just go to his website at homerhickam.com. I want to thank Homer for joining me today. I want to thank you for joining me as well. Again, we'd appreciate it if you'd share this episode with a friend. And if you're watching YouTube, if you can smash that like button, we'd like that too. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll see you next time. God bless.